Hello and welcome to another edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. I'm Jasmine Smith, and today Robert Connie is on vacation, so I have a guest here with me, Clay Kennedy. Clay is making his My Old Kentucky Podcast newsletter and podcast debut in just the span of 1 week. Clay's an attorney, he's a former public defender, and he's the owner of the law office of Clay Kennedy. So Clay, welcome to My Old Kentucky Podcast.
Thanks, Jasmine. It's good to be here.
So Clay's just going to read the news with me because a lot's happened in the last week. So today on the show, we're going to be talking about an AOC audit. We're going to talk about Kentucky politicians' response to Trump and Russia.
Mercy.
And then, right. And then we have a couple stories about racism. So without further ado, let's talk about the AOC audit. So AOC, that stands for Administrative Office of the Court. So when you became an attorney, Clay, what did you think or know the AOC did?
Never heard of the AOC.
Okay.
Still kind of mystified as to what they really do.
Okay, so without looking at my notes that have been provided to you, what is your basic understanding of what AOC is?
They basically keep the lights on in the courthouse and kind of oversee the judge/clerk function and how they interact with the court. Every time I have to deal with them, it's like some sort of unique situation that I've never really had to do before. And I always like end up talking to somebody different, and I'm not necessarily satisfied with the result. I don't know.
Right. So they're a pretty mystical body, I would think. Robert has asked me multiple times when I've mentioned them before on the podcast what they do and what they are. And I remember when I was an attorney and first around the courthouse and stuff, you just kind of hear things like, oh, that was a directive from AOC. We did this because AOC said to do this. But
Right. They
are Administrative Office of the Court, and they're basically the operational arm of the judicial branch. That's what their website says. So
all the forms that we use are basically AOC forms.
Right.
And a lot of times they're wrong, if you want to say.
Sometimes they're difficult to navigate. Sometimes they're incorrect. But anyways, basically what their job is, Clay put it in basic terms, they administer the judicial branch budget, they build and maintain the courthouses and the court facilities, so that's like what Clay said, keeping the lights on, they run various court programs, they maintain like a statewide case management database where you can look up things about cases. So they have a lot of different functions, and they're exactly what their name sounds like, an administrative office for the courts. But AOC was audited, and the findings were not great. They were pretty bad. So the report says things like unchecked leadership and a pervasive lack of accountability. So Chief Justice Minton of our favorite court, Skokie, he requested the audit after the Herald Leader and the AG's office raised some questions about employee-only surplus item sales. So do you know what surplus item sales are?
Yeah, it's like basically we have all this extra stuff. Usually it's open to the public, though.
Right, like so that's what's kind of weird about it.
Yeah, like it'll be an auction. My mom works at the libraries at UK, or used to anyway, and they would have these sales periodically where everything's super cheap, but everybody can come in and buy stuff.
So this would include, like, state cars that they're auctioning off, office equipment, things like that. But, right, you're right. Usually those are public, but the Attorney General's office last year raised some questions about having some employee-only sales, so we're going to get to that. AOC, when this audit report came out, they said that they anticipated some of this, and they've already started making improvements and changes to what they've been doing.
That kind of begs the question, so they knew they screwed up. They weren't going to change anything until it became public?
I think they knew with the sales that like stuff was coming down and they needed to change the rules and the way they were doing things. And their executive director was like, oh, we wanted this audit because we wanted to see how we can improve. I don't really know how true that is, you know. The report says that AOC's administrative rules are not being applied equally to higher levels of management and elected officials. So I think that's talking about like supervisors and judges probably. The audit doesn't really name specific judges, but the Herald Leader thinks one of them is Justice Wright of Letcher County. Basically, this is kind of like, Clay, do you remember all the FBI stuff with the NCAA where they had like Coach 1, Coach 2, and things like that? This is kind of like that. It's
Coach
like they're
1.
Right, they're not naming specific judges, but everyone knows who it is from various cross-references and things like that. So Justice Wright of Letcher County is one of those. They believe that he leased office space from a company owned by his sons at rent 3 times higher than the next bid. So he's a sitting Supreme Court justice. He has office space in Letcher County that's, you know, paid for through the judicial branch budget. But they're saying he was leasing, like, this really nice space with high rent, and his son's owned the company. So that's a little sketchy, right?
Very sketchy.
So AOC responded, and then they're like, no, it only ended up costing twice as much as the next lowest bid, and that space was unacceptable. So AOC kind of took up for Justice Wright in that one. But, you know, just in general, the audit recommends that judges and upper management really need to be checked and held to the same standards as other employees. Some other interesting parts of the audit, a staffer also spent over $400 on personalized mint julep cups for a state justice institute. That seems a little pricey for just kind of some little conference or something, right?
Why?
Yeah. Then we've got the employee-only sales. So there were all kinds of problems with this. Inventory wasn't accurately reported. Taxes weren't consistently applied. Cars were sold to many of the employees in private sales, including a Supreme Court justice. The cars were also sold below value, and a lot of them weren't auctioned off, but they were sold, just sold privately. And so that's the one that AOC saw coming, so they've said that they've already started working on changing that policy. Scott Brown was the person who was in charge of many of those sales, and he's already been fired before the audit even came out. So they did make that step. He sold a lot of items to himself and then, like, didn't record the VIN numbers on the vehicles and stuff. There's also a lot of limited oversight on travel expenses. So judges getting paid for travel expenses that may have been personal and not professional, those kind of things.
Yeah, it's kind of running the gamut. I mean, it's right. Like they're doing everything wrong.
Yeah, a lack of oversight of credit card accounts. So using credit card, staff credit cards without approval. And they said that was AOC's executive director, Justice Minton, and his chief of staff, that there was no oversight with their credit card accounts. So our state auditor, Mike Carman, he believes that a lot of this comes down to just, like, a lack of clear policy structure at AOC, which stems in part from Minton's decision to set policy based on the input of all justices instead of making policy decisions as his authority, with his authority as chief justice. So Harmon recommended that policy should be determined by the full court and opened to the public to determine those policies and have clear policies so that we can avoid these things in the future. But AOC's kind of pushed back from that and been resistant to some of the recommendations in the audit. So even though they are making some changes, especially with some of these, like, weird employee private sales, the state auditor, Mike Harmon's pretty disappointed because they've resisted some of them. Included, one of his big recommendations was forming an independent ethics body, which that sounds like a good idea, right? Like transparency, accountability, they're independent. Yeah. And they rejected that idea as well. They wouldn't agree to an ongoing annual audit. So AOC's kind of pushed back. But I think, you know, to us, like we said, AOC is just kind of this body that we don't know a lot about. So I was surprised by everything that came out. Maybe others that know more about AOC and what they do weren't, but this is kind of a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff, and it seems to go all the way to the top. I mean, you're talking about Chief Justice Minton, his chief of staff.
Right.
Like, it seems pervasive, and it kind of is like, you know, I've always suspect, like, if I don't know what something does, it also doesn't surprise me at the same time if they're also doing a bunch of stuff that they shouldn't be doing. I don't know, you know. It kind of doesn't surprise me now, really.
So, I'm not sure. It sounds like AOC didn't want to agree to keep being audited annually. I don't know if the state auditor's office, I'm sure that they'll continue to be looking into them. I don't know how many changes they're going to implement. But that's what's going on with AOC. So now, Clay, tell us a little bit about what's going on with Trump and Russia and how our state's politicians have responded.
Okay, sure. So if you have had your TV and phone turned off and resisted talking to anyone in your workplace or school, then maybe you don't know that President Trump went to Russia to speak to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Oh, I'm sorry, they didn't go to Russia. They met in Helsinki, Finland. Talked about, debated whether he should even go. Of course, our fearless leader went. And so basically, he stirred up a mountain of controversy when they held their public press conference. And I guess, Jasmine, that was after they had their closed-door meeting
Right, I think that's right.
And so then they come out jointly and take questions from, I think, both Russian and American media. And to the media credit, they asked some really pointed questions, and Trump, needless to say, did not perform so well on some of the questions and has done some kind of weird backtracking and saying he should have done a double negative at times. Instead of would, it should have been wouldn't. I don't know. I don't really right. get it, but I also don't get a lot of things he does.
Right.
So anyway, basically following the immediate backlash was, I think, basically bipartisan, and everyone across the spectrum, Fox News, MSNBC, everybody was basically saying this was the worst thing we've ever seen a president do.
Right, and a lot of Republicans, I think Joe Walsh was one of them, you know, came out on Twitter and said, like, this is the last straw for me with Trump. Honestly, I don't understand why this would be the thing. They've all been using him to get what they want in the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Republicans are also mad about this. This isn't just liberals.
Sure. So everyone weighed in. Well, I shouldn't say everybody. Most of our delegation weighed in. Jon Yarmuth, the only Democrat in our delegation, as you know, issued a very strong response. And I kind of wanted to just read the whole thing verbatim. He said, "The President of the United States made his choices clear today in Helsinki. He chose a murderous dictator over his own intelligence community, propaganda and bullying over a constitutional free press, his own political aspirations over U.S. election security, and frankly, Russia over America. President Trump showed the free world today that they cannot rely on the U.S. as an ally because Vladimir Putin now calls the shots. This is a disgraceful chapter in American history and proof that U.S. interests are not even a factor in the decision-making of this president. I don't know what else my Republican colleagues need before they raise their voices in defense of their country against this treachery." Wow.
Right. So, you know, if you're one of Jon Yarmuth's constituents, which I think we both are, like, what more could you want from your congressman, you know?
You know, I mean, Yeah, I mean, it was exactly how I felt, and I'm glad that he said it.
But also unsurprising. He's always pretty much stood up for progressive policies and against what Trump has been doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's no surprise that he came out strong against Trump's actions.
And he wasn't the only one.
Right.
Yeah. So Senator Leader Mitch McConnell also came out with a statement, and in part he said, "The Russians are not our friends, and I entirely agree with the assessment of our intelligence community." I guess basically saying everything, the CIA, FBI,
right.
National Security Director,
yeah.
held up. And then he went on to say, and I thought this was kind of interesting, "Make no mistake about it, I would say to our friends in Europe, we understand the Russian threat, and I think this is widespread view here in the Senate." And then he also noted that we may take up legislation related to this. I kind of don't really know what he means.
Yeah, I'm not real sure either.
But,
and I feel like this was a pretty basic statement, like, Republican point one, two, three, you know, like...
Oh, he's always by the book. Like
right.
That. I mean, the fact that his was so canned and sort of, like, by the party line doesn't surprise me. The only thing that kind of surprised me was that he sort of made a statement that they might take up legislation related to this.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. So then Hal Rogers, the 5th District Congressman, he stood by a statement that his Paul Ryan said, quote, "The president must appreciate that Russia is not our ally." Paul Ryan went on to say, "There is no moral equivalence between the United States and Russia, which remains hostile to our most basic values and ideals. So Hal adopted the speaker's statement as his own. I don't know. Surprised? Not surprised?
Not surprised. And, you know, I think one thing is that some of these Republican statements, they still fail to actually, like, call out the president directly. They're like, this isn't good, but they don't place any blame on Trump.
Sure.
It doesn't seem.
And that's not new either. I mean, I think they're basically terrified of the president.
Right.
They don't want to draw too much ire from him. Andy Barr, who's going to be running a tight race this election from the 6th District, through his spokesperson said he was in meetings all day and didn't have time to respond. That's kind of cheap.
I think this non-response is actually the most interesting of any of the responses, because most people have at least came out and said something for the most part, but Andy Barr is probably the Republican that's in the most trouble.
Oh, yeah.
In Kentucky. And so I can see why he wouldn't want to make a statement, but maybe he needs to come up with something. You know, I haven't really looked into what he said today. Maybe he said something by now. I don't think that he has. But
I haven't seen any.
He may be in trouble, so he's trying to avoid any bad press if he can.
Sure, but it kind of also makes you wonder, like, is this going to be a situation like when Secretary Lundgren Grimes didn't say who she voted for president, when everybody knows.
Right.
So maybe the non-statement could actually come back to bite him.
Yeah.
Who knows? Representatives Guthrie and Comer did not return requests for comment, so I guess that's, again, a non-answer, similar to Representative Barr. Representative Massey and Senator Rand Paul, the two libertarians from the delegation, they were much softer in their response. They sort of followed the line of the president, and they said, basically, as a general proposition, it's a good idea to meet with world leaders, even if there are leaders that we don't necessarily agree with or that we've had issues with in the past. Representative Massey actually got on MSNBC and gave about 8-minute interview, which he said, in part, he said, I believe the dialogue with other countries is important, and President Trump was right to meet with Russia to promote peace and commerce, and he compared it to when President Obama met with Cuba. I guess that was, what, in his second term?
It was, and, you know, I don't know if Massey said anything about that at the time, if he actually did agree with that
He claimed that he agreed with it at the time.
Okay.
I didn't go back and double check.
Yeah, we didn't fact check that.
Yeah, methinks maybe not so vocal on that one. Anyway, so then Senator Paul at one point said, I think people who say we shouldn't talk, I think are wrong. I think we should have conversations. I mean, I think as a general proposition, that's, yes, I support that. We should talk to everybody. Not talking is usually a bad idea when it comes to world politics. But anyway, he went on to add, saying, I don't expect a great deal to come of this. I think he can bring up that we are annoyed and that we want them to cease and desist on interfering with the elections. I guess what maybe he talked about to Putin behind closed doors, I don't know. Massey, in his MSNBC interview, derided the response of both Republicans and Democrats as sounding like xenophobic isolationists. Did you watch the video of that?
No, I haven't seen that.
It kind of, when he said it, it kind of just like, whoa, oh, man.
Right, like, yeah. Strong terms, strong, bold words.
Strong $4 words. He went on to suggest that, like I said, that this was similar to Obama meeting with Cuba. And then he kind of spent the rest of the interview going on a bizarre tear about Debbie Wasserman Schultz and a password of 123. Seemed to, like, basically not think that Russian meddling was something to be concerned about because there's no allegations that the votes themselves were altered. It got kind of weird and Trumpian in that he kind of just, it's like he said that whatever, it's almost like he said whatever happened isn't a big deal, even if it did happen, and because nothing happened. I don't know. It was confusing.
Yeah, and obviously, like, how this is different from Obama meeting with Cuba is there were all these allegations of election interference and things like that.
Right. I mean, yeah, they still drive like cars from the 50s in Cuba. I don't think they're like hacking our elections or anything. But anyway, that's in a nutshell basically what our delegation had to say. And I'd say other than Representative Yarmuth, it was kind of a non-event, sadly, when people should have stood up and said more.
So, you know, there's a little bit of national politics for you on my Old Kentucky podcast. We don't talk national politics a lot, but this was a huge story. It's what everybody's been talking about, and we wanted to give you a little bit of what our state's politicians had to say. So our last two stories are about Papa John and Matt Bevin. First, we've got Papa John's fall from grace, and this story, it's not really about so much about politics, but it's like you kind of just have to talk about it.
It's like a dumpster fire.
Right.
You just can't turn away.
So I'm sure that listeners already know that Papa John was caught using the N-word on a conference call. And so the whole conference call was this PR firm talking to him about racial sensitivity and trying to help his image, apparently. But you may also remember that he had already resigned as CEO of Papa John's back in January when he blamed the NFL for his low pizza sales. So that had already happened. The conference call comments became public last week, but they were actually made in May. I think Forbes is the one who made them public, and then the dominoes just started to fall. So
the dominoes as the toy.
Right, exactly. Man, I didn't even do that on purpose. So let's talk a little bit about the fallout from that. So first, he resigns as the chairman of the Papa John's board. So that's pretty big, and that was like a quick move. I was kind of surprised that that happened so quickly. Papa John seemed, I don't know, to me, he just kind of seems like a defiant person. So, and then he also resigned from the U of L Board of Trustees, which I think is more unsurprising than him.
That would be the one I would expect over the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Kentucky Democratic Party called on Bevin to remove him from the Board of Trustees, and the Louisville NAACP also called on his resignation removal, but he went ahead and did it on his own. The U of L board chairman, David Grissom, kind of took up for him. He said, after speaking with John, I'm confident that his comments, while inappropriate, do not reflect his personal beliefs or values. I don't really get the sense that people at U of L like Grissom very much, right. But that's what he said about it. U of L then made a pretty quick move when their new president, Neely Bendapudi, announced in a press conference that Papa John's would be removed from U of L's football stadium name and it would just be Cardinal Stadium. So obviously, this is the right move, right? You can't, after this, you can't have Papa John's Cardinal Stadium anymore.
Right, but then it kind of gets dicey because they had some contract issues.
Right, so the contract is really interesting. So it's John Schnatter himself that owns the naming rights to the stadium, not Papa John's the company. And that's an agreement that runs until 2041. So he could name it whatever he wanted to, yeah. Right?
And is he going to live to 2041, maybe?
Right. And there's a really interesting report from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting by Kate Howard on this. I encourage you to go read that report if you want to know more about the contract. But it's unusual for him as an individual to own the naming rights. So compared to UK, so at UK, Commonwealth Stadium is now Kroger Field, but those naming rights belong to JMI Sports, which is a sports marketing firm who purchased the naming rights as part of a 15-year media deal. Then JMI recouped some of its investment through its deal with Kroger. Right. So there's not like an individual themselves. The Kroger CEO doesn't own the naming rights.
So I didn't see a number. Did he pay like in the millions of dollars for this right personally? And not the corporation? Because that would be interesting.
I'm not sure exactly how it works, but I know that it's tax-free, and he also gets a charitable donation for it. So it's very beneficial for him financially to do this. You know, there may be legal consequences, and U of L's president acknowledged that there may be consequences, but she did say that John Schnatter supported the removal because he doesn't want to be a distraction. But I don't really know what supports the removal means. Like, does that still, you know, one has to wonder if that means that they'll have legal or financial ramifications because of the contract, or if he'll just leave well enough alone. I don't know.
Who knows at this point?
So in the same press conference, U of L announced that his name would also be removed from the Schnatter Center for Free Enterprise.
And that's a joint venture between U of L and UK, isn't it?
It is. And so everyone was kind of wondering, like, okay, U of L did it. What's UK going to do? Reggie Thomas called on Eli Capiluto to end UK's ties with Papa John as well. So the very next day, UK did that too. They removed his name from their John Schnatter Institute for Free Enterprise, which is in the Gatton College of Business at UK. And they also said it was a mutual agreement. Even if it's a mutual agreement, I don't know that if that involves financial consequences, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like he's at least agreeable to remove himself as a distraction, but I don't know if that's going to cost the university's money. Some other things that have happened, the Miami Marlins and the Baltimore Orioles also ended their financial contract with Papa John.
The dominoes really did fall.
Right, they did. and then also a gym and community center removed his name from their buildings in Jeffersonville, Indiana, which is his hometown.
Mm.
The Papa not doing so well.
Not so good.
But then he gives an interview with Terry Miners. He acknowledged that it was wrong and that he hurt people, but he blamed the PR firm for pushing him to make those comments and say the N-word, which is ludicrous, right?
He was forced to say it?
He said that they pushed him to make derogatory comments, and he said that he was explaining, really what he was doing was that he was explaining that some people might use the N-word, but that he and Papa John's does not.
Yeah, like Colonel Sanders uses the N-word.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so, and then there was an article today in the paper, I don't know if you saw, now he's, like, second-guessing his decision to step down.
Right, I saw that as well. So, I think this is one of those things, it kind of reminds me of Rick Pitino, after Rick Pitino was fired, and he gave a weird Terry Miners interview like this, and he's like, I'm never going to talk about this again, and then he just keeps talking to people.
To anybody that listens.
Right, and so I think that's kind of what Papa John is doing, too. He should have just gone quietly into the night, probably. But obviously,
these parts, people don't really do that, especially. Right.
No, they really don't. Nice. But you know, he's still obviously a huge shareholder for Papa John's. He'll still be involved in the company. Mm-hmm. And like you said, since then he's already come out and says he is second guessing that decision. So I don't know if he'll try to get back
in. Apparently, retained the same lawyer that Harvey Weinstein and other CEO sort of under siege has gotten, so he's kind of pulling out the big guns.
Right, like so it seems like we haven't seen the end of Papa John, even though his name will be removed from many buildings in the community.
The garlic sauce is still good, though.
I agree. I also like, this is not quite as popular, but the nacho cheese sauce. Okay. Also. Pro tip. All right, and finally, our last topic today. This is almost a week old at this point, but this happened after we recorded last week, so you may already be aware, but Matt Bevin went to the West End and he made some bad comments. In a promotional video, the governor visited the West End Chess Club. So while he was there, he took a tour of the Nativity Academy, a private independent school in Phoenix Hill, but he got himself in some hot water at the very beginning of the video. He said, I'm going to go in and meet some of the West Louisville Chess Club. Not necessarily something you would have thought of when you think of this section of town.
And just crickets after that.
I can't believe, like, presumably he has a team of people around him and that they let him, they filmed that and let him publish it.
And released it. What are you,
So those comments obviously drew a lot of backlash from people who thought that there was some implied racism going on here, which I definitely think there was.
Yeah.
Something like chess to be going on here,
This is a checkers part of town.
Yeah. So Councilman David James, who represents District 6 in Louisville, said that the governor's video was disheartening and angered him, saying that his comments represent his deteriorating relationship with his African-American constituents. He said it was just an obvious move by the governor to take pictures with the African-American community. To perpetuate a stereotype of that community like this is unbelievable. So a spokesman for the governor said in a statement that this was just an attempt by the media to distract from the accomplishments of the kids, and that the governor was only trying to showcase a program that encourages sportsmanship and character building. But you can't say that. On WHAS 11, Doug Prophet provided a pretty serious rebuke of the governor in his Prophet Report segment, showcasing some of the other things the governor might not expect to see in the West End. So this included the West Louisville Tennis Club, Genesis Arts, which teaches ballet at the Shawnee Community Center, and Blue House, a program that teaches classical music to students in the West End. His commentary also touched on how this is connected to a string of missteps by the governor to score some political points by visiting the West End.
Yeah.
So we've talked about all of these things on the podcast before. Pretty much any time Bevin has done something with the West End, it's gone awry, and we've talked about it here on my Old Kentucky podcast. But in March of this year, he met with community leaders in a town hall style meeting. An advisor to President Trump was on hand to witness Bevin saying that he had been heartbroken over the course of 20 years to see that despite the best intentions of some people, this community has sometimes been its own worst enemy. So that's a pretty terrible thing to say.
Yeah.
Too. And then also about a year ago, the governor called on religious leaders in the community to help lift up the West End and save the West End by prayer walking and saving the heroin epidemic by painting rocks.
The most absurd things I've ever heard.
Right, so here's some of the things that Bevin said. He's called teachers thugs. He made that comment a few weeks ago about when people protested the pension bill about children getting molested molested because they were out of school.
They don't get molested on the weekend.
Right.
After school.
The painting rocks thing, do you think this is pretty high up there with some of those outrageous statements.
It's up there. It'll be on his short list of the things we remember as the Matt Bevin administration. And I have to say, sadly, not surprising.
And the whole thing is he keeps making these attempts at the West End to try to score some brownie points, I guess, but it falls flat, and he gets tons of criticism every time. Like, it's not working for him.
No. I kind of like that he wants to go to the West End and engage with it, but he's such a, seems like a political novice that it just never, he never executes. Like,
right. It's not going well. He's not offering, it would be nice if he went there and offered solutions, but he's not doing that.
No.
It seems like he's there for photo ops and town hall meetings that, where he tells them, pray about it, and it'll get better. So I don't understand why he keeps doing this. I don't think that he's going to win over the African-American community. I think if he's trying to score some political points, maybe like getting the moderate Republican teachers back on his side would maybe be a more helpful venture for him. Because I think that his presence is in the West End, I think it's a lost cause for him at this point. Those comments are super offensive. It didn't go well, and it never has.
Probably won't in the future either.
All right, so that's what has gone on in the last week. So thank you for tuning in. You can find our podcast on any podcast app of your choice. We have a Twitter page. Our handle is MyOldKYPod. You can like our Facebook page. And we have a newsletter now. We have a weekly newsletter. Clay wrote for it last week, so you can check out his piece about use of police body cameras. And that's at tinyletter.com/myoldkentuckynewsletter. And you can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast. Thanks.
Thanks.
The corn tops ripe and the meadows in the bloom, while the birds make music all day.